This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Hello and welcome to Duck Snort Baseball Podcast. I'm Greg Nix.
I'm Waylon McQueen.
And we are here with the first week of the baseball season in the books. We are here to talk about the first week. We're going to make some drastic overreactions this week. Specifically, I'm going to make some drastic overreactions, and Waylon is going to either argue for or against those.
I'm going to overreact with
to
you.
My
overreactions.
Or you're going to overreact against? You're going to counter overreact?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a whole, like a pyramid of overreactions.
We're also going to resume our series that we started last season of our favorite and least favorite players for each franchise. And this week we're going to do my least favorite franchise, the Minnesota Twins. So I know, Waylon, you're looking forward to hearing me praise a twin or multiple twins.
I literally said, are you able to do this? Even though I knew you'd be able to. I did the White Sox. Have we done the Cardinals yet? Yeah, we did, didn't we?
I don't have my list.
Doesn't
open.
Matter.
I can't remember.
But
if we didn't, fine. We will.
We will. And yeah. I'll have to choose someone.
Before we get into the meat of the show, let's put some bread on that sandwich by thanking Boardwalk Audio and OffTheBenchBaseball.com for their support. We appreciate both of those organizations very much for helping produce the show and distribute the show. So check out the other podcasts on Boardwalk Audio and check out the great writing about the young season, the newly blooming season on OffTheBenchBaseball.com. Did you like that poetry?
That's good. Newly blooming.
Yeah.
Spring is
in the air. Nubile, the fresh nubile, plump young season. okay, so the first week is in the books. Some strange results, as we always get, of course.
Yeah.
Small sample size caveats usually apply to everything that happens in the first week of the season, except for in this next segment when we have no...
We have nothing else to go off of.
No concept of sample size. We are confident that past results do, in fact, dictate future outcomes.
Yeah. 10 games usually is an indicator of how the rest in April and March is how your whole season goes.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, it's like 7% of the season is done or something. So the rest of the other 93% will obviously go this way.
Fall right in line.
I do think, before we get into this, I'll say, like, I definitely actually do fall victim to the early season small sample sizing of it all. Like, we were just talking about how good Tim Anderson and Yoan Moncada have been for the White Sox. I'm fully over Daniel Palka, the Daniel Palka experience, because he does not have a hit yet. but it's, so... Anything could happen with any of these guys still.
Oh, yeah.
That said, you obviously are happier with a hot start in any context, team, player, whatever, than one where, you know, it potentially indicates underlying issues.
Yeah. That's the thing, is because I think while you shouldn't react to anything with a small sample size, some of it is might be
Right, it's
you
a red flag.
You can't tell what's
a
sign of things to come versus what's
good
or bad. Like, obviously, Tim Anderson is not going to hit 500 this year.
Yeah.
Or but, probably 350.
Right. So. But all things being equal, you'd rather have the 500 hitting start than the 100.
You'd rather talk yourself, if you're the Dodgers, you'd rather talk yourself into scoring 8 runs a game for a whole season.
Right.
Even though you know it's not sustainable, but you're like, well,
prove
me
wrong. Or if
you're
the Cubs, giving up 8 runs a game for the whole season.
But also scoring 7, like they've also scored a ton. but it is like the announcers for the Cubs have been very good at reminding me of, like, because they're, I don't know, 4-6 now or 3-7 or whatever. It doesn't matter. But, like, if you go through that stretch in July and you're not getting, like, and as long as the Brewers or Cardinals aren't 10-0, like, you're not stressing out that much.
It
doesn't. But, like, you should see the texts of friend of the show, Evan Riney, talking me down from having given up on the Cubs season at least three different times already.
I would like to see those texts. I'll take pleasure those texts.
It's just him being like a grandpa, being like, don't worry, it's okay. And like telling me why the Cubs are good and me being like, it's all over. Don't you see Hayward can't field anymore? It's like...
You did predict, I think, a week ago. Like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I feel like you were talking about like what's the Cubs' worst case scenario this season? Like, they're as good as last year. What's good? Like, you're sort of
it is weird. You're right. I don't think I could have foreseen a situation in which they score. Their offense is great. It's not Dodgers or Mariners level this so far, but their offense has been so good, but their pitching has just been so bad. Like, well, I sent a text of just like, they've scored like 6, 5, 10. They lost a game where they scored 10 runs.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Well, so this actually sets up very well my first overreaction, which is that the Dodgers and the Mariners will combine to win more games than the Red Sox and the Cubs.
Oh.
Based on the first season.
This is an overreaction?
Or the first week of the season. Yeah. This is me saying factually this will happen.
Combined. Okay. This is good. So let's
say... What do you think?
So, okay. I will overreact with you on the Dodgers and say they'll win 110 games.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's an overreaction, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They're on... If let's say this continues even a little... Like, even at 80% of what they're doing now, that might be a 110-game win season. Mariners are going to regress, obviously.
Yes. I mean, I do think so. But I did just watch them for a series, and, you know, the offense... There are real pieces there. I mean, Mitch Haniger had a great year last year, obviously.
Right.
So he's the kind of the centerpiece of it. Mm-hmm. And then Edwin Encarnacion has been mm-hmm. very good for very many years. Mm-hmm. The huge outlier is Tim Beckham and...
Jay Bruce has been crushing too, right?
Like, they're not going to be this good, obviously. But I could see it being... an above average offense. Like they haven't had Kyle Seager who hasn't been very good the last year or two, but could be good.
But if he's your sixth best offensive player,
right.
You know, like, well, I mean, I know we listed a few, but like he, cause I feel like in the past he needed to be like their top three.
Right. Domingo Santana, I think, was a great buy low this offseason. I could see him having a very good season. Dan Vogelbach is kind of interesting as like maybe a guy who is putting together, because he put up great numbers in the minors.
Right.
So you kind of think like, oh, maybe he's a Russell Branyan type dude who like puts it together a little bit later, the power and the walk numbers. So like, yeah, I don't know. I kind of don't know if they're... how good they're actually going to be. Like, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs in that division, but...
But this is an overreaction.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So my overreaction, Dodgers plus Mariners greater than Red Sox and Cubs.
So let's say that's 200 wins between the two of them is the overreaction.
Yeah.
Is that a good overreaction
number? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I mean, if... Will the Red... No, yeah. Okay. Gosh, that's so good. Because I think that the... Man, I am going at this point, unless some serious pitching help comes in or Quintana and Darvish figure it out, I am going to have a hard time believing the Cubs get to 90. Plus their bullpen's not. It's like, it's a really...
Yeah, they can't rely on either end of the
pitching
staff.
They're walking people.
What happened to Kyle Hendricks?
I don't know. I think...
Like, if Lester left his start today with an injury,
yeah,
I feel like if Lester's hurt, and with the way Quintana and Darvish have been pitching, like, they really need Kyle Hendricks to
be good. I think Hendricks can
figure it out.
Hendricks is the one that I think can figure it out, because I was watching the game the other day, and it was a tight strike zone, and he's going to get rocked if it's a tight strike zone.
Sure.
If unless he's, like, on his, like, top of his game. And that's what happened. He gave up some home runs. Like... Because he's not like he's going to blow it past anybody. And if his stuff isn't moving that much and he's not but it was, you know, it was those ones a different ump. He has 8 more strikes in the first 3 innings.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which changes everything. So I think Hendricks, he can find his spots. I'm not worried. But Quintana and Darvish, it's the walks that's killing me. or I don't know what Darvish's deal is. I actually didn't watch his. I haven't watched him yet. Like, but Quintana just doesn't have it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, Quintana is one of my favorite players in the majors, based on his time with the White Sox. And as much as like it should delight me to see sort of a Cubs starter struggle, and potentially like the White Sox don't win very many transactions with other teams.
Because it'd be Aloy, right?
Yeah, so they got Jimenez for him. But I can't take any joy in Quintana struggling.
Yeah, it's rough.
But so what do the Cubs do? Do you think like there's, do they just hope that the pitching staff gets better?
Well, I mean, you have to think that. I feel like Quintana is still young enough that he could at least figure it out enough to be like a competent starter.
Yeah.
Right. So if Lester is healthy and Hendricks is fine and Quintana's fine, that's three decent starters. And then you hope Darvish. I don't know what is going to happen with Darvish. That might be a mental thing at this point. I don't know.
Right. So,
but anyway, the bullpen is the big weak spot, is what I'm leading to. Is like, I don't care if they don't touch starting pitching. They got to do something about that bullpen. I don't know what. They don't have really anybody to trade, and Kimbrel's really the only person worth signing. But
yeah, I mean, they should probably sign Kimbrel.
They should definitely sign. They should give him whatever he wants.
We haven't even talked about the Cubs' sort of off-field issues that have come up today that we were just talking about before recording, that they restored an antique sign to the press box that said, in part, "No women allowed" from the 40s, and immediately had to take it down because of an outcry. And then it was also, I don't know if it was revealed or it just... people were tweeting about it for some reason, but that Betsy DeVos is a part owner of the Cubs, which is making a lot of people, I think, unhappy. I mean, hard to have like a less likable figure as a part owner.
Tom Ricketts is up. Like, that's to me, it's just
right,
like,
right. But if
it's
you're
not like
escalate...
their owner was Bernie Sanders. It's like,
no. Like... but like Betsy DeVos, right? I think like, it, regardless of your sort of political leanings, like this is somebody who has like cut funding for the Special Olympics, right?
She's
like about as unlikable
more,
as you get.
She's much more publicly unlikable, or she has been thrust into the public,
right?
But
and
also,
so,
I don't know. How do you put a sign up that says "No women allowed"
in 2019 as like a cute, quote unquote, remnant of the past?
Even
like,
if you're like,
oh, isn't this nostalgic?
Even if you're a person that's like. Even if you're someone that doesn't really think there's a problem with it, there weren't at least one of the probably five people that made that decision that was like, I don't know, guys, people are probably going to be mad.
Yeah, right.
Like, I don't agree with it. I'm not saying this, but even if a person was saying, I don't agree that someone should be mad, they have to know that it's going to cause a shitstorm.
Yeah. You got to anticipate that in some way.
It's
for
so
sure.
Baffling. Anyway, everything that was going to, this is just terrible. I spent like the last week before the season talking myself into the Cubs beforehand, just being like, this is going to be miserable. I'm going to hate this whole year. Last year was so not fun, and I'm going to have to go through it again.
Well, if it makes you feel better, you're not alone in having a miserable season. It has been very miserable watching the White Sox for me, which is another thing, but... even fans of other teams that are ostensibly good are very worried, like the Red Sox, the last part of this overreaction.
Right.
The Red Sox, I think, are in better shape than the Cubs overall. But
yeah,
I would be very concerned if I was them about Chris Sale and how Chris Sale has looked. He just had a start with the lowest top velocity of any of his major league appearances so far. He didn't even crack 90, I don't
think. It was like, it was by like more than just like a mile per hour.
Maybe he cracked 90, but his like average fastball was 89.
Yeah, it was like before it was like 93 or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it was like something big.
Extremely worrisome for sure.
Because they have bullpen problems too, right?
They do, yeah. And they do not have a deep bullpen at all.
And they're... maybe offensively a little more feast and famine than the Cubs. They're more, I mean, they have Martinez and Betts who are,
I mean,
like
their
generationally
offense last
great.
Year was
so good.
A juggernaut.
That's true. Did they lose it? They didn't really lose anybody, did they?
No, not that I can
not
think
that
of
was
off
like
the top
a
of my
huge
head.
Offensive.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. I just don't. Maybe I don't know the Red Sox as well, because I know that like Benintendi's good, Bradley can be good. Like I know they have the bats, but I feel bats that could go south quickly.
Right. They have room for guys to, with the number of guys who had kind of career years for them to.
Yeah.
Some of those guys could potentially just take a step towards regression.
Right. I guess I would say Betts and Martinez are the two, the reliable. Like.
Right.
It would be shocking if they had terrible years.
Yeah, but I guess. You know, if you're comparing them and the Cubs of the high-end talent on those two teams, do you take? You know?
Oh, you take the Red Sox, for
sure. Yeah, yeah.
Plus, the Red Sox, like, are really only battling the Yankees. I mean, maybe the Rays. I don't know if that's an overreaction. I don't even think that's an overreaction. I think the Rays just might be good this year.
I think they'll be in the wild card race at the very least. I mean, we both picked them to win the wild card.
So I think that's not really a surprise. So I guess that's 2-3 team races, so they don't want to dig themselves that deep of a hole.
Okay, so let's do this. What do you think the chance is that the overreaction is correct?
That the Mariners and Dodgers will have more wins than the Cubs. I think that I am going to give it even odds.
Even
odds?
I think it's a 50...
The Dodgers could win 110 games.
This is true.
Because the Diamondbacks and the Giants and the Rockies could all potentially be out of it by August.
Yeah.
That's three teams that they're just going to continue to beat up on.
Yeah, the Rockies have not been very good.
Yeah, and so their only threat is the Padres, who also, I mean, they could have that division locked up, which then they might start losing games because of...
They're just resting whatnot.
Does the call-up thing start this year or next year? The 40-man roster. So they'll have a 40-man? That could be ruining it. But that division could be pretty bad. And so that's something that the Red Sox and Cubs won't enjoy.
I think you're...
I mean, and then the Mariners, whatever.
Yeah, I still think... I think the Mariners will... I would still be surprised if the Mariners finish above 500.
Even if the Mariners win 90 games, or I mean 80 games, and the Dodgers win 100, that's 180, and those aren't even crazy numbers.
Yeah,
that's 180. So that's 90 each for the Red Sox Cubs. Like I said, I could see the Red Sox not winning 100, and I can see the Cubs not winning 90. So that makes it pretty close.
I'm still gonna say there's only a 10% chance that the overreaction is correct, personally.
I just think it's because the Dodgers could be so good. If you would have said Phillies and Mariners, I would have said no chance.
Yeah.
But the Dodgers just have a potential to win between 100 and 110 games, to me. Or they're the Dodgers. They could lose 15 in a row starting today. Like, you never know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, my second overreaction. Mike Trout is currently on pace for... about 19 wins above replacement, which it would be too much of an overreaction, even for this exercise, for me to say that that's going to be the number. But I'm going to say the overreaction is Mike Trout will be worth 12 wins above replacement.
What's the record for a position player?
I think it's like 14. I remember he was threatening it at some point last year.
And then did he get hurt last year? What happened?
Yeah, he got hurt, and then I think he slowed down a little bit in the second half as well. But
because he's a human being, apparently.
But I'm trying to...
So you're seeing a 12 war.
Yeah, I believe that Babe Ruth has the record at 14.1 wins above replacement.
If we're looking at Baseball Reference, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What do you happen to know what... In your overreaction, did you look at what Trout's current... Did he hit 11 one year?
I don't think so. I think I'm looking it up right now.
A lot of questions.
Yeah, quit stalling. Give me your analysis.
Well, I'm trying to put it in context. I would feel like a fool to think that Mike Trout wouldn't be capable of winning or of having a 12 war. He's already at a 1 war.
10.5 wins above replacement is his... highest on Baseball Reference.
Of course I think he could have a 12 war. He's at 1 right now.
Right.
And he didn't have like a great first 6 games. But then his last 6 games have been otherworldly.
Yeah. Well, I mean he's hit home runs in 4 straight, right?
He's hit 5 home runs in 4 games, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and he's really crushing the ball. Mm-hmm. If you've seen some of his, or those home runs, he's hitting them very hard.
I actually haven't seen the highlights for too many of them, but yeah. I do believe that.
Like, the MPH is off the batter in the, like, 112, 116 range for a lot of his...
You want a ridiculous Trout stat amongst ridiculous Trout stats so far? He's walked in 25% of his plate appearances so far, and he struck out in 7% of his plate appearances. I mean, small sample size, overreaction theater. That's like fucking Barry Bonds shit right there. Like, that's crazy.
I also don't even know if you can overreact to Trout. Like, hasn't he earned... Like, unless he hit 3 home runs, like, in 3 straight games, which is obviously not sustainable. But, like, would you be surprised if he finished the season at those numbers?
At the walk and K percentage, yes. I mean, that is,
that
like...
Well, 25% is absurd, yeah.
And but 7% also, is absurd.
But, I mean, he might end up walking a lot more just because it might... Because that team doesn't have anybody behind him.
Yeah,
until
I mean, there have
back.
Been... intentional walks in there for sure, a fair number. And like, but that's what I mean when I say like it's Barry Bonds shit. Like, that's
what
the clip. I mean, Barry Bonds in, let's see, 2002, when he was worth 12 and a half wins, walked in 32% of his plate appearances and struck out in 8% of his plate appearances. Like that.
But do you not think Trout's,
I guess that's
Barry Bonds level of a player?
I guess that's the question. Is like, is he a Barry Bonds? Because those Barry Bonds seasons, chemically enhanced seasons, are probably the best seasons in Major League history, certainly in our lifetime. I mean, Babe Ruth is like the other one, but like the Barry Bonds seasons, though, those like sort of early 2000 seasons are like completely unprecedented. He had a 600 on base percentage.
Yeah.
Like, truly, I mean, an unbelievable thing to behold, at least watching the stat line. Like,
I mean, I think the conditions are there for him to have... I know, I'm not... I would never predict a 600 on base percentage for Mike Trout, but he... If that offense is as bad as it's been, he's going to get walked.
Yeah.
Or he's going to get pitched around.
So it sounds like...
I think it's...
You are... firmly in the camp of Mike Trout is going to, or my,
I think I'm, that he could.
I think, I certainly think he has the ability to put up a 12 win season. I would put it at 50-50 that he puts up a 12 win season before he's done, like before he retires, and like maybe 1 in 4 odds that he does it this year.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, you never know because injuries could happen or whatever.
I hope not. That's my big fear with Trout. Is
no
like,
one does.
Because he's been a little bit dinged up the last couple of years, too. It's just like, just stay healthy. Just like do what we all like want and need you to do. Like,
I mean,
transcend, dude.
He's trying.
I know. I mean, I'm not, trust me, I'm not saying like he should do something different than what he's doing.
Yeah.
It's more like a prayer to the gods. Like, hey, like
please
don't take this from us. You know, give us Trout.
Hold on. I'm trying to look at a Ted Williams number here about the strikeout percentage because he never struck out either. I mean, is that too crazy? He had a season where he had he struck out in 6%. Of his plate appearances.
I don't know if Ted Williams is a good comp for that just because like it was so long ago.
Yeah.
And strikeouts have increased so dramatically since then.
Oh, so he had a season where he walked 22% of his plate appearances and struck out 6%.
Well, I mean, his career numbers are a 20% walk rate and a 7% strikeout rate. But again, this is...
There weren't as many strikeouts then, but he was still abnormal. He walked... That was at a time when walking was seen as like walking pretty much since then was seen as like,
right.
Well,
both walks and strikeouts have
dramatically
increased. Since
but,
then.
I don't think that Trout is incapable of anything you said at all.
Yeah,
I don't think it's crazy. Last year we were like kind of thinking he might be able to pull a 14.
And he could this year. I mean, again, small sample size, he's on pace for like 19.
Yeah, which is not going to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe? I wonder is like, why are you, I don't think you're doing it like hard, but like you're talking about that Bond season, which was chemically enhanced, being so, like, why are you thinking that Trout can't do it? just because it feels humanly impossible.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, the fact that Bonds did it, I think, is like, if you put your blinders on about the steroids, and we've talked at length about our various opinions on steroids, but like, if you sort of take that out of the equation, I think Bonds is unquestionably the best player in Major League history. And this is the best that Barry Bonds was. So if you're saying
I would not say unquestionably the best in history, but he is one of the best.
Okay, statistically the best. We're talking about statistically, right?
Well,
we're talking specifically like this advanced metric that measures statistically and like statistically the on-base percentage and stuff like that. I think we can have reasonable disagreements about virtually anything with baseball.
Yeah, but he is one of the best. Like he is
right,
the best since the 60s.
So we haven't seen anything besides that in our lifetimes, right? So that's why I'm saying like this Bonds thing. Like if Trout has that kind of similar numbers, like without presumably any kind of steroids, like that's the best season, you know, since Babe Ruth probably. Yeah. So like, it's no small achievement to be like, he's even capable of doing this. But I think the reason I'm saying like, it's only 50-50 to me is because like, nobody else has done it. Like,
no, I think it would be crazy. I think 50-50 are about the best odds you can give.
Right,
but
exactly.
But I think like, I guess if it happens, I'll be in awe, but I won't be surprised.
Agreed.
Like, I feel like I was more surprised that Bonds did it than I would if Trout did it.
Right.
Not that I knew Bonds was great, obviously, but like,
I think at the time Bonds did it, I wasn't even completely aware of like how historic, what a historical aberration it was, just because like we kind of all still had like the steroid glasses on where it was like Mark McGwire just did this thing and then Sammy Sosa just did this thing and then like, so it was like,
and plus he was a dick.
He got terrible press coverage by and large, like personally. So I think it was just kind of like, I don't think I was as appreciative of the achievement as I would be now.
I'm still not, and I wouldn't be a Trout too if it turns out, because like a lot of those walks are coming because they're you know what I mean? It's like, it's a tough to navigate.
But that still is impressive to me because you have to be
that good.
I think the thing that was so impressive about those Bond seasons beyond like the raw skill was like, you know, he maybe only saw one pitch to hit per game.
And then he was still.
And then he would hit it. Like to be able to lock in and like still be productive while you're being pitched around like, so dramatically as like a skill unto itself that most people probably don't have because they've never had even any opportunity to develop it.
Well, remember when like Bryce Harper, like, got walked a ton. I think it was against the Cubs in 2015, maybe the series where they walked him like 7 times in 2 games and he just lost it. Mm-hmm. Like because he got so out of rhythm that he was worthless.
Right.
He was not hitting pitches when he got them.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's definitely admirable. And it seems like Trout, I honestly feel like the only thing that can stop Trout is age or an injury. And he's 27. So that's not the age part's out. Like, I don't see a situation in which he has at all ever thrown off his rhythm in any... or, like, maybe getting hit in the head with a... like, something that's, like... it has to be something traumatic.
Right.
And I think that he's that type of player. Yeah, so that's why it wouldn't be that surprising. It's like, I don't see a way that... and that whole thing about just, like, every year he decides to work on something new, and then he just does... then he's just the best at it.
Yeah.
And I think this year it's his K rate.
Yeah.
I don't think 7% is feasible.
I mean, we'll see.
I mean, that's the...
I'm not going to put it outside the realm of possibility, like
what,
but...
that's what I'm saying is he's off to such a great... obviously, he's not going to slug over 1,000 like he is now. But, I don't know. I just think he can do anything.
Right. It's a little bit mind-boggling.
I love it, though. And I hate living in Los Angeles and not being... and getting blacked out. I don't hate living in Los Angeles. Suck. I love living in Los Angeles. But I hate getting blacked out for Mike Trout games.
I'm going to move away from Los Angeles so that I can watch Mike Trout on MLB TV.
Yeah, or just get
the only reason.
Get a VPN. All right. Okay. Other overreactions? Do you have it?
So my final overreaction is the opposite side of the scale, and it is... Chris Davis will never get another hit in the major leagues. He's 0 for his last 44.
Yeah. I mean, do you think he's going to break the record? Because it's 47, right?
Yeah. I mean, and then, I do think he's going to break the record.
What's his name? Rosenthal is on for the pitcher for
yeah,
the Nationals.
Trevor Rosenthal, Trevor Rosenthal has an infinity ERA.
He has a streak of like 11 straight batters who he hasn't retired a batter in 11 straight batters or something like that. And he's
is his ERA still infinity? Has he retired a batter?
He hasn't retired
season?
A batter. Yeah. No. And it goes back to like before he had Tommy John surgery. And so he's closing in on like the most consecutive.
It's bleak. It's
Chris Davis will get a hit in his career. Do you think Chris? I think that's obviously, I know that that's a funny overreaction. Do you think this is a real question? Well, there are a few. Do you think he plays regularly all year? Because the Orioles had nothing to lose throwing him out there.
Well, except for their dignity. I mean, and his dignity.
He'd have to call it quits, though, right?
Well, they could try to buy him out or cut him or something. Find, you know, what do they have to gain by continuing to play him?
What do they have to lose? Is there someone behind him?
There's nothing to lose except, like, you're trying to win baseball games, and he's, like, very obviously the worst player in the major leagues now. Like, even if you're bad, you still want to, like, give the illusion that, like, any individual game can be winnable. And he has looked like the worst player in the majors for, like, going on 3 years now.
I mean, it's just tough with someone like Chris Davis because... Yes, he's bad, and it's been a while, and it's been 6 years, but he did hit 53 home runs. And so my point is if you're the Orioles, what if he hits 30? There was a year that I think I brought up before, and I can't remember the exact numbers, but like McGuire had like 50 hits and 29 of them were home runs. Like, you know, like.
Yeah, but that was Mark McGuire. This is.
I totally get
Chris
it. But
Davis.
Like, but if you're the Orioles and he's not holding anybody back in the minors.
He's holding back. There is opportunity cost to play him if you're the Orioles, even if that opportunity is like, we'll cycle through guys who are AAA first basemen until we find Luke Voit, you know, like Dan Vogelbach.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you're losing out on the opportunity to do that by playing a dude who
is worth like three war.
In 2017 was... a replacement player last year was three wins below replacement and had the lowest batting average qualified.
It's like 168 or something.
Yeah. And is now, hitting, you know, not getting a hit through eight games. Like there's plenty of players who go through eight game slumps, but going back to last season and like what he's shown
he's
over the last 2 years, like I think there's no chance that he becomes a useful major league player again. And it bums me out because I really liked watching him in his prime.
Yeah.
But if I'm the Orioles, like, and this goes on much longer, I'm just going to cut him. Or at the very least, like, send him to AAA, you know, and like...
They probably can't, right?
I mean,
had enough time where they can't or something with his... something where you can't?
Yeah, I think they can outright him to AAA and he can opt to become a free agent. But if he does that, he gives up the... $70 million that are left on his contract or whatever.
I mean, I don't know, man.
I would at least send him on a rehab assignment or something. Like, this dude is, like, broken as a baseball player. And, like, he needs to do something drastic if he's going to stay in the major leagues.
It's one of those things that feels almost, like, personal in a way that, like, I don't usually...
Like, psychological in some way?
I mean, maybe, but I meant more personal and like the decision is because like, I feel like that the Orioles have to sit down and you know what I like, if you're him, like you said, this can't be fun.
Oh my God.
This has to be terrible
for him.
Seems
like the least amount of fun.
But like, the minor leagues is not going to help. I don't think unless it's completely mental,
to extended spring training and bring him through every single level of the minors to like rebuild
but then,
his swing.
That's
why
I think it's personal. It's just like, dude, are you willing to go through that?
Yeah, like, but like that's what I don't think we're saying dramatically different things.
No, I
think like if you're the Orioles, it's either like, look, you have to commit to doing this or like, we're just going to cut you because there's no reason for us to keep playing you.
That's
like,
what I'm saying.
The
I think
money
it's personal.
Is a sunk cost.
Yeah, I think that they basically have to say, what do you want to do? And if he says, I want to be a major leaguer and I'm not leaving, then that's what I'm saying. I don't think that they can set, I think it has to be his decision to do anything but get cut.
Right.
Is what I'm saying. And if you're the Orioles, it has to be that too.
I guess like what it reminds me of it a little bit is Carmelo Anthony at the beginning of this year with the Rockets. And it was like just clearly not working.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like if it's so clear that it's not going to work in the current scenario, like why drag it out? Like I just think they should just cut him and be done with it and like wish him well. And if he can catch on somewhere else or he can go to Japan or something, that's like
that's probably
up to
his
him,
best course of action is to go to Korea or Japan.
Yeah, going to Korea would be probably he'd hit 80 home runs in Korea probably, you know.
I hope he does that and I hope he does well because like it is terrible.
It's really sad. I really liked him in his prime for sure. And those Oriole teams when they were good were really fun. That he was a part of, you know.
Yeah, with like Adam Jones and
Manny
Brian
Machado
Roberts
and
Manny Machado.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I do think he'll get a hit. They probably won't. I mean, I'm guessing that's...
I, like, don't know if he'll get a hit, honestly.
He's got to get a hit.
It's more likely than not, but, like, even if you look at his batting average, like, last year, he only got a hit 16% of the time. So, like, if that's his baseline, he needs another, like, what? I guess, theoretically, you would say another 8 at-bats to get a hit.
Yeah.
Like, I just wonder how close to the end of the line this sort of like relationship is. But you're probably right that he will get a hit, but there's maybe a 5% chance that he won't.
Yeah. I mean,
they'll cut him before he ends this streak.
My thinking is that if they're planning on cutting him this early, they're waiting for him to get a hit to do it.
I guess. Yeah.
But
I mean, you're probably
right.
Here's
my question though. Let's pretend that's the Orioles' plan. They're like, we're going to let him get his hit, so they're not talking about it.
I don't know if the Orioles have any plan
about
anything.
Let's pretend that they do have a plan. And let's say that their plan is, we're going to give him till he gets a hit, and then he's gone. So that isn't the narrative. Like, he doesn't end his career on this terrible streak. When do you give up on that plan and just admit that he's never getting a hit again? Do you go through May? Like how?
I mean, if it gets to May, like there's no, they gotta put it.
Even if he's only playing one every 4 games at that point, but he still doesn't have a hit through May, do you just say like it's over?
Yeah, you gotta.
Like, how long do you give him to get the hit? Is my question.
That's like it's not a big enough reward to for either side to just keep throwing him out there if he like just to chase a single hit. Like that becomes sad after a while.
It's sad.
It's already sad, but like just to like. If they both know that it's going to be the end of the... like,
well, I'm assuming that Chris Davis doesn't know in this scenario.
I mean, but there comes a point where you gotta like acknowledge the truth when it's in front of you.
There's zero chance that teams... I have not watched a single at-bat of Chris Davis's this year. The shift has to be on against Chris Davis, right?
Yeah.
Bunt. Get the hit. Bunt against the shift. Just get the hit and walk away.
But is that any less embarrassing?
Do you want the streak? No one in
he's already the lowest batting average. Like it doesn't seem like they have, I don't know if it's him or it's the Orioles, but like when Adam Dunn had the terrible season for the White Sox, they benched him for the last 4 games so that he wouldn't qualify to be the
worst
hitter.
Yeah.
They didn't do that with Chris Davis.
I know, but I'm saying specifically talking about the streak. He's like 3 at-bats away, right? Just bunt and get on.
I think
because in 20 years, when someone else is 0-45, no one's going to say, well, no one's going to say Chris Davis bunted to get on. They're all going to say, like, it's whoever has it now. And, like, Chris Davis doesn't have that.
Yeah, but
bunting to get the hits, the equivalent of sitting Adam Dunn.
I think if he had the ability or the desire to do that, I don't know which one is lacking, but like he would have done it already.
He's
0-44, dude.
But if the record's 0-47.
But if you could get a hit anytime by bunting.
But I understand that. I mean, I think we both understand the mentality of why every, like Joey Gallo doesn't bunt or anybody else doesn't bunt against the shift every time, right? Like, so I can understand Chris Davis not. And I understand Chris Davis being proud enough to be like, well, I can get a hit before 47. But now when you're staring down the barrel of 0-44, 0-45, Yeah, like, but desperate, what happens if desperate he, times call for desperate
What happens
measures.
If he tries to bunt and he doesn't get a hit?
That's why you do it now.
But that's what I'm saying. He does it in three at-bats or whatever, and he gets out every time because he can't bunt he strikes out.
I'm saying his next at-bat, he does it. And if it doesn't work, then now he still has two more at-bats to do it the regular way.
You only
way.
Do it once? I don't know, man.
Oh, three straight times would be one of the saddest things
that
I
would be
think
the most
of.
Humiliating thing. That's the most humiliating option there is.
I think you try it once. Yeah, sorry. No, I get what you're saying. Oh, my God. Seeing him not bunt for a hit. Can you imagine if the third one was like a foul tip on strike three and that's the way he's...
I don't know. It's all a bummer. I shouldn't... Like, there's no way he plays in the major leagues after this season.
I don't think he makes it to the All-Star break, probably, right?
The only thing that I know the Orioles are fucking weird.
Well, that's what I was saying, that they might throw him out there, but...
But at a certain point, it just becomes embarrassing, and the fans boo him every time, and like, there's just no reason to keep doing it for anybody involved. Like, the money is spent. You know, if you're the Orioles, like, you're never getting a return on that investment. So, like, go try to find a return in some other way.
You've already lost money. I mean, he was negative three WAR last year. That like, actually cost them money.
Yeah, and I can understand, like, okay, we'll give him the offseason to see if he can get back to even replacement level. But, like, doesn't seem like it, you know?
Yeah. That's all right. Too bad. It's, like, one of the saddest on-field stories that doesn't have to do with an injury that you can think of.
Yeah. Well,
he'll get a hit. I think he'll get
one
a hit.
Of the saddest stories.
I think he might break the record, but I think he'll get a hit.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the only thing sadder than Chris Davis, the Minnesota Twins. All right, we are back here in Duck Snort HQ, the castle on the mount, as the studio's known to all around.
It is literally on a castle and on top of a mountain.
Yep. People look up and tremble. We are here talking about our favorite and least favorite Minnesota Twins of all time. So if you are a new listener or you haven't listened in a while, we've been doing this segment sort of periodically over the last year. I'm hoping to get through every franchise with our favorite and least favorite players. And the favorite and least favorite doesn't have anything to do with whether a player is good or not. It's just purely personal opinion.
Oh, it's definitely personal.
So with that said, the Twins, the Twinkies.
Your least favorite team.
Definitely my least favorite franchise as Duck Snort listeners will know that they tortured the White Sox for most of the 2000s, just always being a little bit better and a little bit better in the most annoying ways, just like the grindy and slap hitty and contact pitchy and just like somehow greater than the sum of their parts. While the White Sox were always less than the sum of their parts. So,
it was a weird run that they had there in like the late 90s, early 2000s, and then periodically since then. Even now.
Yeah. Now they're a weird team. We don't have to get too deep into now because I'm not even sure what to make of them
in
the current season. Yeah. But certainly, I think, you know, the new front office has been trying to change their identity, but the kind of players that they liked were, you know, those average hitters. And, of course, they famously lost David Ortiz. They thought he was too much of a home run swinger, and they liked these really low strikeout guys, and I think they've had to get away from that because the game has changed so much in the last few years. But that archetype I still associate with the Twins for sure.
It's hard to shake.
Yeah. What are your sort of overall feelings on the Twins as a franchise?
I actually love the Twins.
You fucking asshole.
Well, it's so weird because they're in the Royals division, but I think I've said this before. The Royals were bad from, I kind of came online baseball-wise in 92, which was kind of their first real bad year.
Right.
They got worse, but that was like the first time that they were like, oh, the Royals might not be good. And then it got worse and worse, and then with the exception of the 3 years that they were good, or 4 years, they had one season. So it's hard for me to, I didn't develop any sort of callous against division rivals.
Yeah.
Because they're,
they were never in the hunt.
And Minnesota is close to Iowa. I like a lot of their teams. I like that mentality of like scrappy underdog. In the first World Series I ever watched was 91 when they beat the Braves. And so like, my first like baseball memories were like, oh, this team is fun and good, and so I've always had like a soft spot in my heart for the Twins, even though they're AL Central. And as luck would have it, they weren't really the huge rivals when the Royals were in the division race. That was the Indians.
Yeah, and it also was very easy to feel sympathy for them during the contraction talks.
So I
can understand sort of the league-wide sympathy for the Twins, yeah, even if I don't agree with it.
I feel like, to me, they feel like the... I feel like a lot of people feel the same way that I feel about the Twins, about the Brewers, maybe. Like, it's
sure,
hard,
yeah,
it's hard to, like, really hate them. They've always had, like, fun players. Like, it's like that same Midwestern, like,
yeah, I can
Brewers
see that.
Attitude. So
I can see that. That's actually a great analog.
Yeah,
sort of like Cubs and Brewers and like White Sox, Twins. I can see that.
Yeah, so it's that's how I've always. So I've always really like, if the Twins win the World Series again, unless it's against the Cubs, really, I'll probably be happy.
Okay.
Unless they like destroyed the Royals in the process somehow. But
so who is your favorite Twin ever?
So this is really hard for me because I do like the Twins and I think they've had a lot of great players, and like Well, I don't want to just start naming him because one of them might be yours, but my favorite's Kirby Puckett.
I think he's the easy favorite for sure,
yeah,
just in terms of like general Twins history. Like,
yeah,
super likable player, very good player. I think I want to say like I can't remember exactly what kind of legal trouble he got into after
his
career.
It was like cornering a woman,
yeah,
in a bathroom,
sort of,
which isn't
the kind
like
of thing
great.
That has not like...
Yeah,
I think at the time was probably brushed off in a way that it wouldn't be now.
I still have like a sense memory of reading the Sports Illustrated article in like my parents' house about it.
Yeah.
So I almost didn't bring him up because of that, because like he also seemed like his... I don't want to make excuses for him if he did those terrible things. It just seemed like his brain was...
Yeah, he seemed troubled for
in
a general way.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as far as playing career, I think he was one of the more likable stars,
yeah,
in baseball. You know, this sort of like chubby, but somehow very athletic, like
he
excellent
played,
hitter.
He played like a good center
field.
Yeah,
like a good,
yeah,
center field, and sort of like goofy, was certainly the leader of those Twins teams in the late 80s and early 90s,
yeah,
that were very good.
And it was like, you know, his career was like tragically cut short because he developed that eye.
Right.
It was glaucoma, I think, right?
Yeah.
Like,
was it in part from getting hit in the face, or were those two things unrelated? I can't remember either.
And I can't remember if him getting the hit in the face is also why like he ended up having a little bit of brain. You know what I mean? Like, there was
a lot.
And then he died early. There was so much that was tied up into it. So it was like a really kind of awful end, but... And like, he was also my mom's favorite player. Like, that was like one of the three players my mom could name when I was a kid. You know
right.
what I mean? So definitely a lot of off the field stuff. And, you know, if there are more things about him that I don't know or I'm not remembering, I don't want to exonerate her. I don't want to put him on a pedestal if he turned out to be kind of a behind the scenes worse than
we know. Yeah.
But just on the field wise, he was definitely my favorite.
Yeah. I had him on my list as well. And I do think for like probably both of us, part of it is like, oh, like I didn't witness the prime of his career, mm-hmm, you know, but I witnessed sort of the tail end of his career and the like, by the time I knew of him, he was already a legend, like in the vein of like an Ozzie Smith or something
right.
like that, where it's like, oh, I just know like, when I was first getting to know baseball, he was beloved. And so that shine sort of like wore off on me, as it did with a lot of those like early
right.
90s, like the Carlton Fisks, the Ozzie
yeah.
Smiths, the even the Cal Ripkins, like
yeah.
That kind of star that was just before maybe, or just as I was getting into
right.
baseball.
Yeah.
My favorite Twin was very tough. In part because, like, I think a lot of the Twins that I like kind of like, I also kind of hate, because
right.
it was like they were good
because
against
you
the
hate
White
them
Sox.
And they're good, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And that is true of the guy I picked, which is Jim Tomey.
Wow.
And so the thing about Jim Tomey is he went to the Twins right after the White Sox won, like, basically. Yeah. He said he wanted to stay with the White Sox, and yeah. they didn't want him, even for a reduced price. They thought he was done, and he proceeded to go to the Twins and absolutely crush it for 2 years. And both years were years that the White Sox struggled offensively and ended up finishing just behind the Twins in the standings. And I was like, this dude wanted to be a White Sox, and like, you didn't keep him. Yeah, his first year in Minnesota in 108 games, he had a an OPS above 1,000. And it was just
if you would have said, like, name the team Tomei played for, I would have come up with it. But, like, I just did not.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was the last stop in his career. Yeah, and it was only for like a season and a half.
Or the fourth team I think of. I mean, yeah.
I mean, would you? Here's, I'm on Jim Tomey's Baseball Reference. Here's some other obscure teams that Jim Tomey played for that you might not remember: the Dodgers.
Oh wow! No, I don't know if I even come up with that.
The Orioles.
What?
That was the last team he played for, was the Orioles.
So I feel like everyone, because I think like Sammy Sosa and Vladimir Guerrero played for the Orioles. Maybe not Vlad, yeah. but no, Sosa Vlad definitely did. Yeah. So, wow. Okay.
But yeah, it was such a huge mistake by the White Sox, yeah. and for such a likable player to like go from my favorite team to my least favorite team and proceed to just like absolutely stomp the White Sox. It was like,
yeah,
we're getting exactly what we deserve on this, and it's so painful to watch.
Yeah.
So it's tough like to say like he's my favorite player because I fucking love Jim Tomey and he's like yeah. so likable, and I'm glad that he was able to keep playing. Like, I'm glad yeah. somebody gave him a chance, and I'm glad he was good for that team. But like, it's still hard for me to be like, yeah, but it was the fucking Twins.
I think that's a good place to go with favorite.
Though. Yeah.
So Joe Mauer was a close second for me. I'll just say that.
That's fair.
I can't believe that he's your least favorite, Joe Mauer.
I didn't say Joe Mauer.
No, I know. But I'm just saying, I'm bringing up... I don't want to bring up players that potentially could be your least favorite,
yeah,
but
yeah.
it's like,
insane
if Joe Mauer was your least favorite to me.
Like, in a way, like, I don't like him just because he was sort of the enduring tentpole of this Twins franchise.
Yeah.
I also think Joe Mauer was like always underappreciated and like unfairly maligned for what he couldn't do, except for the one season that he won the MVP. I have some sympathy for him.
I think it was like the expectations put on him were too much.
Oh yeah, for sure. And he lived up to them almost. Like, he had like a 9-win season yeah. or something.
And then he made
the
mistake that 1 year of hitting like 23 home runs. And then so then now everyone thought he was,
that was MVP.
A power hit. Oh, that was an MVP yeah. year. But I think every time he didn't hit at least 18,
yeah.
everyone was like, what's his deal?
I do wonder what Joe Mauer's career looks like in a more forward-thinking organization. That like,
oh yeah.
Because he was such an OBP monster, and like, could he have tapped more power with a different organizational philosophy? Would he have been able to stay at catcher longer potentially if with like a team,
or would have
I don't know if that the training staff could do anything about the concussions,
right?
But they, you know, you look at what happened to Justin Morneau, and like, I think it's pretty clear the Twins didn't handle that super well. Otherwise,
oh no,
you know, it took him so long and he never yeah. really came yeah. back. So
he's an announcer on the Twins now, and he's pretty good.
Well, this is
for one game.
This is a good transition because I actually, Justin Morneau was on my list of least favorites.
Ever, I figured that might be the case.
He was overrated, I think, for a lot of his career.
Also
even relative
MVP
to like Paul Konerko, you know, like I think Paul Konerko is a better player, but yeah, Morneau's the MVP
Paul
winner.
Paul Konerko might go down as an all-time underrated player, right?
It's tough. I think he's an all-time underrated bat, but he brought nothing else to the table.
Oh, that's a good point. So offensive player.
Yeah. yeah. So I would say potentially as a hitter, but like there's, you know, I obviously believe in the advanced stats, and like, so the White Sox acquired Konerko by trading Mike Cameron for him.
Oh, I didn't realize
that. And the advanced stats say like Mike Cameron was a much, much more valuable player throughout the course of his
right.
career because he was such a great defender.
Yeah.
That Konerko's only, I think he's only worth like 30 wins above replacement,
so it's one of
or
those
something
things.
Like
I
that.
See.
But that being said, I love Konerko overall.
Yeah.
And he certainly was a great hitter for the White Sox.
So maybe if I say, like, he's underrated during his time when everyone was comparing each other on the same.
Yeah, I think so. And like also as a first baseman, he wasn't like a flashy sort of, like, he never had a season where he hit like 50 homers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he was certainly a better player than like Mo Vaughn or like other guys who have won in the MVP.
Or Derek Lee probably.
Yeah, maybe.
You think so? I guess I don't know.
They're probably about equivalent players, Derek Lee. I would say. Konerko maybe was had a little bit more longevity to them. But actually, I think that's actually probably a pretty good comp.
All right. There we go.
So who is your least favorite?
This is tough because, like I said, they've never, I mean, AJ Pierzynski's terrible, but we're trying not to name the same two people. So yeah. That was who it would have been. And I named him for the White Sox. I think when I was looking back, like, there aren't a lot of, this is a situation where it's like, there are not a lot of players I've disliked. There are a lot of players that have ended up being disappointing. But I think the only one that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, and this is probably crazy, is Chuck Knobloch.
Oh, interesting.
Like, I never got on board with Chuck Knobloch, even before he famously yipped his way out of the league. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what it was. I can't even put my finger on it. Like,
I think he was kind of a redneck, right?
Maybe,
am I making that up?
Maybe that's what it is. And I think
he also potentially had some like domestic violence
issues.
Okay.
So
as
maybe
well.
There was some residual stuff. Like, I guess like the way that you picture the Twins when you're in your very biased brain, mm-hmm. Chuck Knobloch is that for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy. Statistically, again, like his numbers were kind of nuts. In 1996, he had a 965 OPS as a second baseman. Like
in 90s, that's
that like that's, a nearly nine win season.
Really?
Yeah. A dude who I think would be a lot more appreciated were he to play today because he had a very good batting eye. But yep. I can understand not liking him. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did have a domestic violence issue after his playing career.
Well, so I picked one I liked and one I didn't like.
He was also named in the Mitchell Report as a steroid user, which I'm not inclined to judge too harshly, but take that for what you will.
That doesn't really affect it one way or the other. I guess it's like, I don't know. Just in care. It's just, I feel like sometimes you just don't like a player.
Yeah.
Jose Ramirez. I cannot get on board with Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before.
But I think, you know, it's like, I don't know why.
I think that's insane personally, but there you go.
But also, like, I know why you think it's insane. You know what I mean? Because yeah, I love, it's not even an Indians thing, because I love Francisco Lindor.
Yeah.
I just don't know what it is. And so I think, but to me, that's what makes, because sports is 100% irrational anyway.
Yeah. Like, so much is subjective, which is the point of this.
That's the point of any of all of this. Like, mm-hmm. It's the only thing that makes any sense is if you like a team if you were born in that city. Yeah, that's right. The only thing that makes any sense.
And even then, it's like, you're just born here.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, you, like, you know, it doesn't have to be representative of you.
But liking players for, liking or disliking on the field players is so arbitrary. And so I think it's fun, and I think you agree with this, but I don't mind having players just like, you know what? Something about him. Don't love Gary Sanchez. Why? I don't know.
Well, so my least favorite Twins are definitely like guys that I just didn't like.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm picking two because I think
we have a tie.
Well, it's kind of because I think that they're actually the same player. Oh, they just like, one year they like stopped giving a uniform to Lou Ford and started giving it to Jason Kubel instead.
Oh, okay.
And they're both like pretty good hitting outfielders who came out of nowhere and like
Jason
just
Kubel's
like kind of like
one.
Boring white guy outfielders with like very Minnesotan names. Even Lou Ford is like the twinsiest name that you can
put together. Like, but even like they're so good at having those players. Like Brian Dozier, for some reason, is like the most Twins name I can think of.
I agree.
Jason Kipnis is it?
Trevor Plouffe.
Jason Kipnis needs to be on the Twins because that's also maybe it's just so close to Kluber. But yeah, that makes sense. Those are good ones.
Yeah, and
Lou Ford is an absurd person.
It's an absurd
pick.
Yeah,
like,
But like, it was like, this is how they kept winning divisions, was cranking out these like decent hitters that, again, I mean, it all comes back to the White Sox for me, which is unfortunate for the listeners of this podcast, but they just, it was the kind of guy the White Sox could never find and still can't find. Is like, oh, this, like, you know, unheralded prospect came up and was like a 2 to 3 win player for several years. And that is the kind of thing that allows, like, sustained contention.
Right.
You know, because you don't have to be paying $12 million a year for, like, a guy who will hit 20 home runs. You can just kind of get them, you know, while they're young, and you're not overcommitted to them when they go on that downhill slope, which is problematic when they're like, don't have a super high peak to begin with.
Yeah, I feel like that's been the White Sox.
They're
getting a lot of that downhill slope.
They've been on the downside of, like, a lot of players' careers. It's been, like, you know, stars and scrubs for basically as long as I can remember, with the exception of 2005. Like, it's been a real stars and scrubs thing where, like, they've generally had high-end players but did not have, like, a middle section of the lineup that, or the bullpen or whatever, that could prop up, you know. It would be like, oh, Chris Sale is worth 7 wins and the entire lineup was also worth 7 wins, you know. Yeah. Like, so anyway, Kubel and Ford, I salute you on having moderately successful careers that made my life miserable.
If you would have asked me, I would have guessed that you would have said Brad Radke.
Radke was the other guy on my list. I did very much not like Brad Radke.
He seems like the perfect person to hate if you hate the Twins.
Yeah, even his name is like fucking Radke. Brad Radke and Nick Punto were the other two guys
Nick
on
Punto's
my list.
Nick Punto's pretty good. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, the grindiest of the grinders.
I would have guessed you'd have gone with Morneau or Radke.
You got a pretty good beat on me then. Yeah.
Well, I think I understand what you don't like about the Twins. And I can tap into it. I just don't agree. I will give a shout out as a historical. I love Harmon Killebrew, one of my all-time faves. And I also, if we want to go Washington Senators, you gotta bring up Walter Johnson.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Who is
the big train?
The big train. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you have never seen a video of him pitch, this is for you, Greg, or anybody. You should look it up.
Okay.
Because if you think Chris Sale has an insane delivery,
I don't know if I've ever seen it. I'll have to look it up. I think I had a Walter Johnson like baseball card when I was younger.
Like
a reproduction.
Yeah,
you know?
They had those like black and white, they had like a black border.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a series in like the midnight. I have so many of them, but yeah. Walter Johnson.
So I remember like looking at his baseball card. Yeah. I can picture him in my mind's eye in this baseball card.
Yeah. Find a GIF or a video of him.
All right.
They definitely exist. They would be like from the 20s in the World Series when he was at the end of his career, but as far as I know, his mechanics were the same, so it's equally crazy.
Well, I might do that immediately after we start recording, because we have come to the end of another episode of Duck Snort. Want to thank everyone for listening. One more shout out to Boardwalk Audio and to Off the Bench Baseball, as well as to Moonbounce for the transition music, and our old producer, Joey Joe Weber, for the theme song. Please follow us on Twitter. Leave some reviews in the iTunes store. Let people know that we're back. Let your friends know. And we will see you next week with, we'll have slightly more information about this baseball season, so our reviews will be, or our opinions will be, proportionally less overreactions, right?
Yeah.
It's all math. At some point they'll meet in the middle and it'll be like a perfect reaction, and then it'll be an underreaction because we have too much information.
I think we should every week with our information still compare it to this first week.
Yeah,
so even if the Mariners are like at the end of the season, like have at like 70 wins, we should still be like, I still like, look like, at that first week.
Yeah.
I think
that's
that
their true talent level.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that this has just been 65 games.
A 5 month slump.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, we will talk to you guys next week.
Boardwalk Audio Podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.